Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You are listening to The Curator Podcast, Season 2, Episode 5. An interview with Laura Jane Grace from Against Me. Hi, it's me, Mark. Just wanted to jump in here real quick and say that I've been a huge Against Me fan for, well, years, probably about 10 years, yeah. And to actually get a chance to sit down and talk to Laura Jane Grace was a total honour for me. And, you know, when I started this podcast, I had a list of people I wanted to talk to, and she was definitely on it. And now I can put a big tick, massive tick next to that. It's pretty cool. So I think this interview went quite well, and I hope you enjoy it too.
Laura, I'm trying really hard here to not lose my shit. It's a total honour to meet you. How are you?
I'm doing okay, no complaints.
I've got a question that I want to ask you, and I don't get to ask it a lot, right? Because I don't really get to talk to many people who I think are one of the best songwriters like ever, okay?
Thanks.
And the question is, as I'm sitting here across from you, I'm quite nervous and it's quite intimidating. And my question to you is, if there's somebody that you'd want to interview, that you'd find quite daunting, who would that be?
Jeez, I don't know. I've been lucky. I've been able to meet a lot of my heroes. But, I don't know. For the most part, I don't think I'd want to. Like, if I had a songwriting hero or something like that, I think I'd let it be, you know?
Like, yeah. Just kind of like, I think I'll just leave that. Like, maybe just keep that as a fantasy in my head almost, and just not actually talk to that person.
Yeah, you know, like, I think it'd be better off that way.
So you've been doing a lot of press. I was doing my research all throughout the week, and it seems like there's so many interviews you've done recently, and you kind of touched on it a little bit, but it must be kind of blurring into one almost at this point.
A little bit, yeah. I'm a little burnt out on doing press, to be honest. I kind of don't want to do it anymore.
I can imagine, especially like so much has happened like this year, the book, the album, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll put my cards on the table right now. I've not read the book because it's really hard to get it.
Well, I've been hearing it over here. I don't think it's like officially released over here until like end of January or something that.
Have you got any? Have you got any copies with you?
We should. We had copies initially, but we sold out of them, mm-hmm. and then we were supposed to receive another box or so today. So I'm not sure if they showed up, but in theory.
So I mean that press gauntlet. I mean, I know you're talking to a journalist just now, and it's kind of like a self fulfilling prophecy almost. It's like, oh, I fucking hate doing this stuff. But like, is it? I mean, it must. How does it feel at this point? Like to have been doing so much like constant press.
As I said, I'm burnt out on it. I don't want to do it anymore. I think I'm going to quit doing press after this tour.
Because I don't want to talk too much about the book because I've not read it, but a lot of the interviews have been sort of hammering in on that as well. And it's obviously a huge thing, mm-hmm. you know, writing a memoir. And I was just blown away by so many people keep asking the same question, like, where does a title come from? And I was thinking to myself, can you not just Google, like, there's an article that you did, like, on Noisy that explains, like, everything?
Yeah. It's like, well, it's true. I did write an article that explains it. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, a lot of times, too, like, doing press for the book feels redundant, where it's like, yo, all the answers are just in the book. Yeah. Like the book is basically like the most extensive interview you could ever hope for. Like, you know, starting from when I was born, you know.
I mean, I gather from some of the interviews I've read that you kept journals, which has been a recurring theme as well, mm-hmm. in all the interviews. But this podcast is all about creativity and sort of passion and just generally talking about what makes creative people tick.
Yeah.
And that sort of desire to keep writing and keep journals, has that helped you become a better songwriter, do you think?
I hope so. I mean, that was kind of like the goal of it, you know, was that like I could only write lyrics like or in the style of lyrics for so much, you know, like and oftentimes, you know, you really need to feel creative in order to write lyrics, which isn't always the case, you know. So in order to just like be in the act of writing, like I found journaling was easy because you can like write down the most mundane thing ever, like woke up, got breakfast, eggs, toast, mm-hmm. coffee, you know. So you're still writing, you're still doing the act of writing, but it doesn't take creativity, you know. But the theory was that hopefully that would make me a better lyricist, you know? So I don't know. It's up to other people to judge.
Do you feel as though you've kind of changed yourself as you've been doing the journaling process and the way that you compose lyrics? Do you think that's evolved over the years?
Sure. I mean, you like develop different tricks almost. And like, you know, there's a saying, I think it was Picasso that... like inspiration is out there, but it has to find you in the act, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, so you can be having one of those like moments where you're not feeling creative, but you have a pen and a paper in hand, and then you accidentally stumble onto something. And oftentimes that'll happen where I'll be like writing journal style and I'll come across a line, you know, that'll like resonate, that I'll expand on. Other times it's like easier where it's just like full on, you know, a song flows out of you and those are kind of the moments you wait for, but... you know, there's no science to it, unfortunately.
I guess it's obviously like anything, being creative and being a songwriter, it's like a job, isn't it? Like you got to turn up every day and like sit down and go, I'm going to write some chords today, I'm going to write some lyrics today.
Sure, and I really respect like writers who take that approach of like having the habit of writing, you know, of like it being a practice of like, I will write every day, I'll force myself to do it. And as a job, you know, and like I really believe that artists should be compensated for their work or deserve to be paid for their work, or that it's a valuable thing and it's a totally valuable contribution to society. You know, like music in particular, like name a society that existed that has existed without music.
Exactly.
You know?
I mean, I guess you've got that. You obviously have that drive to keep. I mean, I presume you kept journals every day.
I try to. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, and seeing you don't do it, does it feel kind of weird? Do you kind of feel like you've...
I feel guilty if I don't write. I feel
I
like,
that
oh,
too.
Shit.
I get that, you know? As well.
Yeah, uh-huh.
I often wonder where that drive comes from. Like, I need to do something like this, like, every day, you know? Like, it clearly develops from a very young age, but, like, try to pinpoint it as, like, yeah, let's... it's like psychoanalysis. It's like, can I really go back to that point?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's like, I think it's once you... like, it takes effort to get into the habit. So once you establish the habit, you, like... you don't want the effort to be a waste, you know?
Yeah, I mean, totally makes sense. Has writing a book made you... I mean, you've always said you've got aspirations to be a writer. Mm-hmm. So has writing a book fulfilled that, or has it made you want to do it more?
It's made me want to do it more. Excellent. You know, like, it's kind of like the same with records where you're like, okay, you did the first one, and then you're like, okay, I need to make sure this wasn't a fluke, you know, like, that it's like, that it wasn't just like a one-off thing, and you want to like, I don't know, you feel like you want to, I think one thing that like keeps me writing too is that like, I want to feel like I'm getting better at it, you know, like, and I want to feel like I progress, so like, there's always that urge to like top what you've done, you know?
Looking over, like, when you were going through the process of writing the book, did you see the progress in your writing?
I did, yeah, for sure. Even like, I could see the progress in my handwriting, you know, just like my hand getting stronger, you know. But yeah, for sure, you know, like able to formulate thoughts better, able to like express myself better, the way I felt more, and that's part of it too. Specifically, the journaling is like, being in touch with yourself and your emotions and processing, you know, like, this is how I feel. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, you know, if you don't express the way you feel, especially because, like, it'd be a little obnoxious if you were constantly telling your friends, you know, like, how you felt every step of the way. You know, like, having that as an outlet, like, helps you to better understand yourself and the ability to look back and to know for certain, like, this is how I felt at this time doing this thing, you know, like, I know because I wrote it down, not because I'm remembering incorrectly. Yeah. You know,
I mean, combining all the writing and the journals you've done and all the music you've made, I mean, that's a staggering amount of creative output to have over the course of 36 years or something like that. I mean, that's like a treadmill. You want to keep going. And where does that drive come from to just keep wanting to be creative? And
I appreciate you saying that. I mean, I let you know, like, it's this year in particular, obviously, there's been a lot of valuable artists passing.
Yes.
And anytime that's happened, I've kind of, like, looked at their body of work and kind of felt humbled by it, where it's like, okay, David Bowie had, like, 27 full-length albums.
He wrote so many records, and, like, year after year after year. I mean, there's a lot of shrappings of stuff that modern bands have that he just didn't have.
Yeah, didn't have to tour as much because he could make money off of just putting out records. Yeah. But then, like, you look at, like, Prince compared to David Bowie, and he had, like, 40-some-odd full-length records. And I look at that number, and I'm just like, shit, I've only done 7 full-lengths. I really got to start working harder, you know?
But, I mean, that's part of it. Like, that guilt is, like, I'm a writer as well, and I feel really guilty when I'm not writing, and it just makes me go, oh, man, Mark, can you just fucking do something today? Can you maybe just sit down, like, half an hour, just write some nonsense, you know? Mm-hmm. And I guess the downside to have somebody with, like, an oeuvre that big, though, is, like, have you listened to a lot of Prince's records? Like, he's got, like, lots of great ones, and he's got, like,
Right. But I also, you know, I'm a strong believer in volume in that way, where, like, especially with lyric writing, where I've learned that it's more about, like, go for volume. Like, if I fill up 4 pages worth of, you know, random thoughts, I know I have a song in it. And it's not that every single line is great. It's just that I know that there's enough in there that I can chop it down into something pretty good, you know? So, like, I've always been that type of writer where it's like, go for volume, and then edit.
Making it smaller till it's something recognizable.
Well, I mean, that was, like, you know, my approach with the book, too. Yeah. It was like, you know, going into it, I didn't know exactly what it was going to be. But first step of going back and transcribing all my journals, I had, like, close to 2 million words, like, oh, a million and a half words. Oh, so knowing that I think my book ended up around 75,000 words, looking at a million and a half words, I knew that it's like, okay, well, there has to be a book in there.
Yeah, uh-huh.
You know, there just is. So, you know, like, by like percentages and odds, there has to be a book in a million and a half words.
There's got to be something in there that I can keep, surely, hope to God there's something in there.
Right. But I mean, if you look at also, like, okay, 75,000 words out of a million and a half words, meaning that 75,000 of the words were good and like however many, like a million of them were just crap. Like, you know, that's not a good ratio, but nonetheless, that's my style.
But
you know?
Got there in the end, though. That's the thing. Then it's like chipping, it's like climbing a mountain.
Right.
You've got to take it every single step, and you're going to discard so much stuff.
Right.
You must do that when you're writing songs and, like, chord progressions and like, you know, when you sit down with the guitar, you actually bang out a song. I mean, you must get the same kind of process, like volume. Is that the same
sure,
kind of thing?
Sure, sure, sure. And oftentimes, it's, you know, you're playing mind games with yourself. And, you know, that was one of the things that was, like, first time we ever worked with a producer, like a real producer, was kind of taught to me. It's like, they're just like, keep writing. And that's part of a producer's job, is to encourage you to keep writing. So, like, for instance, the record New Wave we did, like, I wrote 30 songs for that. It's a 10-song record, you know? So, like, when you're writing that much, you sometimes don't even realize what the good stuff is. And that's probably part of the point, is like to turn off that kind of like self-evaluation as you're going, and to just like not be paying attention or overthinking it. Just like write.
Turn off that self-critical part. Was that hard to begin with? I guess you started writing songs when you were really young, so was that even there?
But it is. It totally is. And I mean, I feel like that's like the most common thing anytime I ask for somebody who's like just starting out, where they're like, what's the best advice you could give me, like, for writing songs, is that you will think you're shit. Mm-hmm. Like, starting out, you will think I'm no good and everything I write is crap. Mm-hmm. And you just have to write crappy things for a while. Yeah. And eventually, hopefully, you'll get better. But you're never going to get better unless you just put out the shit first.
That's always been my philosophy when it comes to writing and writing music. So I'm so glad to hear somebody like you saying that, because it's like, oh, thank God. Crippling self-doubt.
But I still have that self-doubt where you're like, because every time, you know, every time you finish a record, you're like essentially starting over with a blank slate of an ego of like, oh, I'll never write a good song again. Or like even with a book, it's like, oh, I'll never write a book again. How, you know, like, how could I possibly do it again? Like, you know, it's like you feel like it's, I mean, maybe part of that is like thinking that it's a bit of magic and that you've like where you'll lost the magic when really it was all you all along.
Yeah,
you know?
You've got this basically. You've got this. You've done this before. You can do it again.
Right. You have the ability. It just takes like, you have to realize that in yourself. You know?
The last time I was in here, I was interviewing a guy called Slug in a band called Atmosphere, a hip hop group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
He said to me, he was like, I keep doing this because I want to write the perfect song.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on that?
I agree 100%. You know, that really is like part of the drive, and maybe that's an impossible thing to really achieve, because what is the perfect song? But you do, like, maybe, you know, maybe that's in like a more traditional sense of like you want to write a song that's a number one hit, you know, like. But I think there's validity to that, not even in that it's like, you know, saying like you want to make a ton of money or something like that, just in wanting to write something that can connect with a massive amount of people, because that is something that you're transcending limitations. You know, writing a song that the whole punk community can identify with has a limitation on it. Writing a song that can get past the punk community, that the punk community could still identify with, but different types of people can identify with, that's a trick. You know, like, you really, like, it's about breaking outside of whatever barrier or whatever, like, ghetto you're confined to, you know, and being, writing something that's universal, you know. And that was, like, with book stuff, that was really important, and that was, like, kind of a trick to do, too, where it was, like, because some of the things, like, when talking about punk stuff is, like, limited to, well, you have to know about the punk scene. Like, so sometimes, like, we went in and, like, explained, like, okay, you mentioned Fat Mike. Who's Fat Mike? You know, if, like, your grandma's reading this book, she needs to know who Fat Mike is. She needs some context. Sometimes, it didn't bother explaining, like, with Ian MacKay. It's like, okay, you just need to look up who Ian MacKay is, you know, like, but that, like, I definitely wanted to, like, not be confined by just having a book that only the punk scene could understand.
There's two ways I want to go, but I have to say it just now. It's funny you mentioned Ian MacKay, because, like, the biggest interview I've done to date was Ian MacKay.
Amazing. And I would be nervous as fuck.
I was very nervous. It's not just a fact you're kind of going, like, oh, man, like, you've done so much, and it's more like, see, if you start to say something stupid, that guy's going to cut you down. Like, he's just going to eviscerate you on the spot, you know, so don't say anything stupid, please, that kind of thing. But million dollar question then is, have you come close to a perfect song?
I don't think so, no. I think I can say that in a healthy way of, like, I still feel like a drive of, like, maybe this next record, you know, maybe the next song. And I really, like, I believe too, like, you're only as good as the last song you've written, you know, or the last thing you've done in that way. But I still feel like there's the ability to grow and the ability to do more.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That's really interesting, book. I think I'd be the same. Like, you might have written a perfect song, to a lot of people. I think you have written at least a couple of them.
Thanks.
But it's like what keeps you up, isn't it? It's what gets you up in the morning. It's like, sure, I'm going to do better today because this is who I am. You know, I'm a musician. And the only thing that I know, I don't know if I'm not speaking universally here, but for me, the only thing that I really know is the only thing that really makes me feel good is when I get up there or when I write the song and I'm like, sure, cool, you know, that's fucking like, I actually feel like a human being today when I do that, you know?
Sure.
Which is, I think a lot of people might hear that and go, that sounds really weird, but it's like, well, that's kind of the way that I've defined myself, my identity, and kind of accidentally.
Right, right. Well, and I, you know, like going back to that statement too about the perfect song, I feel like it's like, there's a lot of variables in it too, where like, you know, you can feel like, oh, I really wrote a great song, and then you record it and you're like, fuck, but the recording wasn't that great, you know, like, or there's a shortfall there where you're like, damn it, you know, the snare sound or like the fucking guitar tone is really not good, or that just wasn't the best vocal performance, or I wish the melody would have been different there, but the lyrics are really good, you know? So it's like so many different parts of the puzzle that you need to get right. And it's hard to like be cognizant of that all the time, you know, or like, or even like being like, okay, we did it, we wrote a really good song, but then like the tour for the record is like shit, and you're like, damn it, you know, like if we could just like get that perfect combination of writing the perfect songs for the perfect record and going out and having the best tours ever, you know. It's unfair oftentimes too, going back to like where we originally started talking, where I feel like there's an unrealistic expectation now on artists where it's like, not only do you have to write the perfect song, write the perfect record, but then you have to be really good at doing press too. Mm-hmm. And you have to be able to give the perfect interview, yeah, or otherwise your music's gonna get lost in the shuffle. Which is like, I didn't fucking set out to be like the best person ever at doing interviews. I like that's not satisfying to me. What's satisfying to me is writing, you know, yeah, and is feeling successful with that, you know?
That's another thing I kind of noticed about a lot of the interviews you've done. It's like people have a certain expectation of an artist to be a particular kind of person, like, all the time.
Right.
And that must grind on you, like, quite a lot. Like, you've got to be, you just have to be what they expect you to be.
Well, it takes away your humanness.
Yeah, I know.
You know, like, because you can have a bad day, exactly, and it doesn't make you an asshole.
It's going to happen.
Yeah, it's just going to happen.
Human.
Yeah, totally, totally. Uh-huh.
And we all have shitty days, and I'm kind of wondering, just going back to the songwriting thing, see, when you picked up the guitar to start writing songs, was that about writing the perfect song, or was it just about, I've got something I want to say, so I'm going to say it?
Like, at the start?
Yeah.
It wasn't about the perfect song. It was more about, like, overcoming fear. Like, specifically just because, you know, with Against Me in particular, like, I started out in other bands, you know? And with Against Me, it was like, it didn't start it as a band. So it was like, okay, I want to write 10 songs on my own and record them and release them as a cassette tape, because that seems terrifying, because it's like you're more naked on your own. Mm-hmm. And then it was about, okay, I did that. Now I want to play one show, just one show on my own, just me and an acoustic guitar, because that seems really scary, because I'm used to having a band up there and I'm used to volume, you know? So then once I accomplished that goal, it was like, cool, I did that, you know? Like, it wasn't a good show. I like could critique my performance, you know, like the first Against Me cassette isn't, they're not good songs, you know, like it's not a good recording by any means, but I did it, you know, like I accomplished the goal. So it was really just about like that kind of goal oriented satisfaction, you know?
So what's the terrifying thing now? Like what's the next thing in your journey there?
I don't know. I mean, like the book was, you know, like the book's out now, yeah, but that was like really terrifying to me, because then you're like, you're taking away the music, you're taking away the metaphor. It's just like all there, and it's diaries, it's journals. So it's like now you're reading my diary, you know? Like, and if you've ever kept a diary, most people don't want people to read their diary. Yeah. They keep it hidden underneath their bed or whatever, you know? But I don't know, you know? Like, I have been thinking a lot about that, you know, of like, okay, what next? And, you know, luckily, like, I've had time, you know, there's no rush, and we have a lot of touring planned out. So that's the immediate plan, is go on tour, play some shows, and like, you'll figure it out.
What is Green Day next?
Yeah. Yeah. That's very cool. I'm excited about that. Yeah.
I mean, you guys have played arenas and stuff before.
Uh-huh. And we played with Green Day too. Yeah.
And what's it like thinking that's on the horizon? Like, this is the next thing. Like,
it's exciting. Although, like, you know, you look at it in a different way. Like, the first time you go into playing a show that's, like, that big, like, first time we played with Green Day was Giant Stadium, and that was, like, 58,000 people. But
No biggie.
Yeah, but at the same time, you're like, oh, my God, 58,000 people. Like, I hope we don't suck. And you get up there, and you're like, oh, wait, no one's here to see us. They don't fucking care. They're not paying attention. So it becomes a different thing. And, like, in a way, there's less pressure with those kind of shows. I mean, you know, to begin with, you're playing a shorter set. And then also, like, for the majority of people there, all your songs are new songs. So it's not like this worry of like, oh shit, we really got to make sure the set works because we don't want to have lulls in it and, you know, make sure that everyone hears what they want to hear, you know, like, and that we still get to play what we want to play. With those shows like that, it's like, we can play whatever we want and it's a shorter amount of time. So it's easier to make the set list. And you really, you don't have anything to lose. Mm-hmm. All you have, you're just out there with the possibility of gaining new fans, which is like really freeing in this way. And then also like you have, or I like to adopt this mentality of destroy. Go out there, destroy the stage, make it, you know, be a tough act to follow, yeah. Which is like a lot more satisfying. I feel like I work better with opposition, you know, as opposed to like, okay, it's our show, you know, like we're the last band playing. I like it better sometimes to have it like that.
So I want to talk about Shapeshift with me because I really like it, obviously.
Thanks.
This is why I'm here. And you said that you're writing it in between writing the book.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an immediacy to the record, which I'm not saying that your other records kind of don't have.
Say that again.
There's an immediacy to it or a presentness to it, which I think of a lot of your other records don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And was that because you were kind of using it as a relief as opposed to the focus?
100%. Yeah. I mean, it was like for the first time in such a long time where there was no pressure on songwriting, where I could have easily just done a book this year and like still been busy, still done as much press as I've done, you know, and then done an Against Me record later. It was just cause that it was like songwriting became this really great release. And because the book was so much about reflecting on the past, that the record just became about how do I feel now at this very moment? Like what is the, whatever emotion I'm experiencing and writing about it.
Was that empowering?
It was great. And it really made it easy, you know, and a lot of it too was like the momentum that we had as a band of like, you know, it was a record written on tour and touring was going really good, you know, and the shows were really fun. So it was like capturing good times and like having songs where good memories were associated with them. Not necessarily songs where you're like, I mean, there are songs where it's like working through like something that's troubling me, but most of the songs are just like, that was a really fun time. You know, like, oh, I went to Australia, I fell in love with a girl named Rebecca. I'm going to write a song about it. You know, like just really like, I don't know. It doesn't always have to be deep in a way, you know?
I mean, a lot of music isn't deep as well. When we still enjoy it, we still...
Sure. And just because it isn't deep doesn't mean there's not depth.
Of course.
If that makes sense.
Of course. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I've also heard somebody told me, I've seen it somewhere, that you guys, that you kind of did it at a more kind of collaborative process.
Sure.
As
yeah,
well.
Yeah.
I mean, that also is kind of new. So, like, and that's all new band at this point as well, you know?
Right,
it's
right.
New James and Atom, and I fucking always loved those guys anyway, you know, so it's definitely that the when I seen you guys a couple of years ago here in the garage, it was like, that's, it's going to sound really weird to say it, and I don't mean it in an offensive way, but it was like the most together I've seen Against Me be on stage.
Sure, no, and that feeling was there, you know, and it was also like, you know, the openness was like, not to sound like a hippie or something like that, but like it was like wanting to be open to whatever the universe sent my way, you know, and make the most of that, yeah. Whatever great opportunity there was, wanting to recognize it and to jump on it. And like from my own perspective of being a fan of Inge and Atom, of like kind of like, you know, fanning out and being like, oh my God, I'm in a band with Atom and he was in Rocket from the Crypt and India is an international noise conspiracy and I get to make a record with him. This is going to be fucking awesome. You know, like what a rhythm section. So like there was that, you know, that like stokedness, that like kind of little kid stokedness.
I can't imagine what that would have been like, but you can feel that on the record though. You can hear that. You can hear that, like, it sounds pure cliche to say, oh yeah, you need electricity, man, and on the record, but that's kind of true, I think.
I think so too,
and,
you know?
And I don't want to seem like I'm like talking up or anything, but I genuinely do think that is one of the things I enjoy the most about the record. And I'm wondering, does that context of that record being the way it is, does that change the context of older songs now that you play them together live?
Sure, sure. And I mean, like, that often dictates what older songs you play, you know, because, like, if it doesn't feel good, I don't want to play it. And if it doesn't work as the four of us, I don't want to play it. And of it, and there are songs that, like, are particular to, like, oh, well, that was, like, me and Andrew and Warren and James. You know, like, that doesn't work with the yeah. four of us now. So, you know, any song we're still playing that's an older song, it's, like, and I think that's, like, a good sign of good song, too, is that if it's able to grow with you, you know, and the meaning of it can change as you change.
When it comes to the picking set list, are there songs that maybe some other people in the band want but haven't grown with you particularly that you couldn't really play anymore? Because a lot of artists get that, you know. Every single person I've spoken to is, like, there's some songs we just can't play anymore because it doesn't feel like, well, it's not the same people that's written it, obviously, but it doesn't feel relevant to me anymore.
Sure, 100%. I mean, like, two examples of that is, like, you know, a really, really old Against Me song called Burn. And that wasn't even the name of it. I never titled it. That's what fans ended up calling it. And, like, I've long refused to play that song yeah. because I feel like that it's kind of fake in this way, you know, specifically because I never finished writing the second mm-hmm. verse. Anyone who always, like, protests when I say that, it's like, okay, well, what are the lyrics to the second mm-hmm. verse? And they're like, I don't know. And it's like, yeah, because I mumble on the recording. Another example would be, like, you know, the song We Laugh at Danger and Break All the Rules. I love that song. Like, have a totally different feeling towards it than Burn, but it became this song where we always played it last in the set, and people always, like, it was like, and now's the moment we get up on stage, mm-hmm. you know? And they were, like, began to develop almost, like, a predictability to that, where it's like, I want that to be spontaneous. I don't want it to be this, like, and this is when this happens, because that leads to, like, staleness, you know?
So I guess it's obviously that thing, kind of, like, do you want, I guess you're kind of saying to fans, do you want to see the band being authentic, or do you just want to hear what you want to hear because you love that song?
I want to see the band being authentic.
Yeah, totally.
You know,
totally.
Yeah.
That's why we love punk rock music, because
sure.
we're here to see that.
And sometimes that means disappointing people, yeah. you know?
Because that's, I think another thing that goes back to what people expect an artist to be is, like, they expect you to play everything. It's like, fucking just play all the songs. Play all the songs, right? Play all the records. It's fine. You're like, well, no, because A, no. That'll be really tiring, and C, I'm a human being. I don't like some of those songs anymore.
Right.
You know?
And I, like, you know, I think at any given moment, I only have the ability to, like, remember the chords and lyrics for, like, 40 songs.
So that actually happens. Like, you get to that stage.
Well, yeah. And you write a new record, and, like, you, honestly, like, you end up, like, dumping songs. Like, okay, got to make room for these ones. You know, like, where it's just like, I mean, I'm only human. I can only remember so much, you know?
I used to always think when I would see bands live and they would have, like, bigger bands that have, like, the lyrics. I'm like, that's a cop-out.
But no, really, actually, sometimes you need it. Need yeah, yeah.
Wow, that's crazy. Uh-huh. Man, like, I've got another couple of questions that my friend who's a huge Against Me fan wanted me to ask you.
Okay.
I'm going to go with a couple of them because I think they're quite good questions. I mean, I'm human, you know. See, when the band was started and it started taking off, did you feel that your shows were kind of stood apart from your peers and stuff like that?
I did. I mean, I think of, like, some of that was, like, embarrassingly young egotism, you know, like, because I was like, oh, there's no band like us. But in a lot of ways, like, we were doing something really unique, especially, like, when it was, like, me, James, Dustin, yeah. and Warren, mm-hmm. you know, or Dustin and Kevin specifically, where it was like, you know, Kevin didn't even fucking play with cymbals. What other band had a drummer that didn't have cymbals? You know, like, there was a feeling of, like, okay, we're like pioneering a sound within folk punk that, like, many people haven't done before. And then there was, like, the feeling of, like, okay, and now this has been done before, and, like, let's move on, you know? But there was that feeling, yeah.
When you were moving out of the whole sort of folk punk thing, was there any kind of trepidation there about kind of trying to get a bigger audience or play better songs or play different kinds of songs?
No, because it wasn't really like a... it was like just the way it naturally happened. Mm-hmm. You know, like, some of, like, starting to play electric guitar with a full band had to even do with like feedback issues, you know, or just like sonically the acoustic would get lost, especially when we're starting out and we're playing venues that are kind of shit venues and don't have monitors and don't have a good PA. And it's like, I can't fucking hear my guitar. I just can't hear it. I need to play an electric guitar. So some of it was like, that's what dictated the changes in sound, you know. Some of it was like, well, this is the equipment we have, this is what we're going to play. And some of it was just like aesthetic choices of like, this is what I want to do. You know, it's not like someone's forcing me to do it. It's just what I want to do. And I don't care if it makes anyone happy but me.
So talking about feedback, actually, whenever I play a guitar with a lot of gain, and whenever I play the Rickenbacker, that's kind of the first thing that happens is like a squealing feedback.
Yeah.
Was that guitar choice because you used to play acoustic, or was it just what felt natural when you started playing them? Or?
No, it was like, like with Rickenbackers, I love the way they look. Mm-hmm. They just...
That new matte black one that I seen on the Steph Myers. Yeah. I actually don't like it personally, but yeah. I fucking love it. I love the look of that guitar. I was like, that
right.
looks badass.
They're fucking cool looking guitars. And then, like, I have always strived for a sound that was more trebly. So like a lot of that was, and Rickenbackers are semi-hollow. So it retains some of the feel of playing an acoustic guitar, where if it's not plugged in, you still have sound, you know? And the strings have resistance in a different way than like a Telecaster does, you know? But that like high-end sheen, specifically like that Rickenbackers have, that I mean, you can hear in anyone else's music that plays Rickenbacker, is like the sound I always was attracted to.
And you've got that Tele now as well, which is a totally kick-ass.
The Nash, yeah. I brought I brought a different Nash with me on this one. It's called a Wayfarer. That's I've been playing for the past couple of tours, and I like that too. I like guitars when it comes down to it, so I just love guitars.
I haven't actually really spoken so much about equipment on this podcast because I don't want to bore people, but I fucking love guitars.
Yeah. I have kind of an obscene amount of guitars.
How many guitars do you have?
Probably like 25, 30 guitars or so, something like that.
I've only got three.
You'll get there. Don't worry, you'll get there.
Well, hopefully. So is it just a Rickenbacker that you generally bring on tour, or is it guitars you don't bring on tour?
I have like a 1964 Fender Jaguar that I don't bring on tour. It's just a studio guitar. And I have a couple other guitars that are more just like, I want this to be a studio guitar. And if you take something on tour, it inevitably gets damaged, or like, you know, there's more wear and tear on it. So there's some guitars that I just like relegate to studio land.
That makes sense, because that was the next question I was going to ask. Is like, do you worry on the road when you've got a guitar and it's like, well, I know this is probably not going to make it through in the same shape?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. No, I mean, whether that's scratches or like the fear of theft, even, you know, like, yeah. Touch wood. But, yeah.
One of my pals wanted me to ask you about searching for a form of clarity.
Yeah.
And he was asking, what was your state of mind when you were writing the record, both personally and as a band at the time? Because it seems so self-lacerating, and it also looks quite outward, but also quite outward and brutally on the music at the time.
I was fucked up at the time. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I was in a really dark and negative headspace. But also I was like coming out of a really dark and negative headspace. I had gone through a period of time, and I'll talk openly about this just because it's all in the book. But I was coming out of a period of time where I was really struggling with drug addiction. And like, due to drug addiction, I was like in a really paranoid place where I'd convinced myself I was dying. Yeah. And I was like, just, you know, like, this was like 2004. And we had been on tour for like 2 years. So I was really exhausted from the road and came out of that. And when we started writing, I like made a New Year's resolution where I was like, I'm going to sober up, right? So then I sobered up. And so like for writing the record, I was sober for like 9 months and was like trying to become really like, you know, physically fit, really healthy, going to the gym every day and stuff like that. So I was like getting better, but at the same time, because I had like lost all my crutches, I was really tense. Mm-hmm. And just like really like also having to relearn how to write and like how to be creative, because I didn't have the crutches that I had used before.
I've never really considered that before. Like, that must have been an interesting period then, to try and realize how to write in a way which doesn't have the crutches you had before.
Sure, yeah. But also, you know, that was a record too where we were trying to write as a band. Mm-hmm. And the four of us, when it was me, James, Andrew, and Warren, were never really good at that. Like, we really had like communication problems when it came down to it. And for whatever reasons, like, just never were good at coming up with music together. So it was really like trying to force that, you know, of like, this is going to be a group effort. everyone is going to contribute, whether you like it or not. So sometimes that kind of led to, like, again, more tension, you know?
I haven't been on tour for that long, and obviously you're on the road quite a lot anyway. Is that something you look forward to when you're like at home and before the tour? Do you look
going
forward
on tour?
To going back on the road?
Yeah, it's one of those things. I think most musicians will to attest to this, where it's like you could be on tour for like 3 months and you're like, oh my God, I am so burnt out on going on tour. Like, I just want to go home. And then you'll be home for 2 days and you're like, all right, when's the next tour? Let's go. Come on, I got to get out of here. Let's do something. Yeah.
And then after that album, there was New Wave, and one of the questions you also wanted me to ask you was, do you feel as though fans have come round to that now? Because I remember at the time, a lot of fans were kind of like, fuck you.
Yeah.
I'm out of here. I'm done. Bye.
That's always been our story, though. It's always like, yeah, everyone's always like, fuck the new record. I like the old record. Fuck the new record. I like the old record. With every single record, there'd always been an element of that. But I do think that fans have come around on New Wave.
Yeah, that's how I got in. That's like, it was Thrash of New. That was my entry point.
Right.
It's like I seen the video on MTV or something. Yeah. And I was like, who are this band? This is interesting.
I think that record too has a uniqueness to it of that, because that's the only record we don't control. Warner still owns it. And like the vinyl has gone out of print, you know. There was a label that, much to my chagrin, like repressed it recently, but it was like going for insane prices on eBay because people couldn't get it. So like anytime there's a record that goes out of print and like becomes rare in that way, like a mystique will develop around it, you know.
I mean, are you kind of annoyed with the fact that you don't have control of the records?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, sucks.
That's what Prince was all about, really, wasn't it? The whole thing in the '90s, it's like, I have no control over my music like this.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to begin to try and understand the thought processes behind major labels and why they want to do that, because that's the whole murky world of bad shit.
Yeah.
Bad vibes.
Yeah.
Well, Laura, it's been a total fucking pleasure to talk to you.
Right on, pleasure's fine.
I done it. I got through it. I didn't say anything stupid. So, is there anything you want to add or anything you want to ask me before we finish?
I'd like to say thank you. And do you want a copy of my book? I have a copy on the bus. You can have.
I'll have to edit that part out.
But okay. Okay.
That would be amazing, actually. We'll wrap this up. So, Laura, thank you very much for talking to me.
Yeah, my pleasure. My pleasure.
Speaking to Laura Jean Grace was a total honour for me. I've been a huge fan for so many years. She was good company, and hopefully we can get a chance to meet again someday. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please take a second to give this a rating and review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate that. And if you haven't already, please hit that subscribe button in whatever podcasting app that you're currently using. For further information on the music used in this episode, please check the show notes. Thank you very much. Until next time, bye-bye.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.